the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Get your sports info first thing in the morning, every morning, right here. This is Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Adam hits one deep to right center field. A long, high, deep drive. Yes, sir. Let's admire that one. There she goes. Sailing right over the Rangers bullpen and deep right center field. The Blue Jays 7. The Rangers nothing as Adam has homered here in back-to-back games.
Jerry Howarth on the call. Good morning, everybody. Brady, Lang, Farwell. Oh, my heavens. Yes, the Blue Jays. I mean, this is how we feel about them. We want to love them, feel them, and we want to wrap ourselves around them. Yeah! Squeeze them, please them. They're 5.5 games out of the wild card. It's exciting.
Are you okay, Greg?
No! I like the fact that they're 4 games below 500, a tiny bit
I've
better.
I've never been more excited for a Rockies-Blue Jays series than the one that begins tonight at the Rogers Center with Jorge De La Rosa and Josh Johnson. That's a lot of Jays in there, but it's exciting, like the Pointer Sisters say.
We want to see if Colby Rasmus is going to hit a home run in 4 straight games.
Dirty girls, huh, the Pointer Sisters?
What?
I mean, you got to listen to their lyrics. I want a man with a slow hand. Hey, lady, settle down a little bit, okay? My kids are listening to this station.
Anyway. Did they ask you what that meant, Dad?
8:05, it's Brady and Lang. Eric Smith later this hour, Buck Martinez. 3 things we'll get to before 8:15. How could the Stanley Cup Finals possibly end before 6 games? Maybe there's a window for one of the teams. Maybe. The Spurs with a 3-2 lead, but Miami are still the favorites, per some bookmakers. How does that work? We'll talk about the 114-104 win for the Spurs last night, and of course the start of Manu Ginobili. But we begin with the Jays sweeping Texas. They've won 5 straight. Texas has lost 6 straight. Look, we kid, but it's awfully different perspective than even a week ago, where you're thinking, how much do you do with this ball club? How many calls will Alex Anthopoulos get with trade offers? And I think we've been pretty consistent. All 3 of us, we might disagree on this, disagree on that. Pretty consistent on keeping the veteran core here. The name that's out there is Johnson, that teams are going to seek. And a good start tonight does 2 things for you. It increases his trade value. It also increases the likelihood that you'll want to keep it when the deadline comes. But at the same time, they're in a place where many didn't think they'd be, or at least didn't think they could be without a 5-game winning streak.
And think about just going back the last 10 games, beating pitchers like Barry Zito and pitchers of that ilk to get there to this point and beating the Rangers. So you're beating quality teams in the standings. These aren't just old dregs teams, and you're doing it with outstanding starting pitching, Colby Rasmus with some power, and Adam Lind is hitting and is dialed in as any hitter in baseball right now.
Well, and think about it. What was frustrating about early part of the season was not just, you know, they kind of hung in okay with some bigger teams. Had a big comeback win against the Tigers. They've been skewered against the Yankees, and then teams you hope that you just lock in a series win. They were losing. They were losing 2 out of 3 to Seattle. They were losing 2 out of 4 to the White Sox. So now a month in June where you're 9-4. And you have huge opportunities ahead of you. After these 3 games against Colorado, the only games the rest of the month, all divisional games, and then you've got the Tigers for 4 here. And I'll tell you something, you know, there's a lot of people that are thinking I'm a big Tiger slappy. They're not a very good road team. I don't think they're managed well, and they're not a very good road team. Those are 2 statements I have for the Tigers. They have the same road record. If I told you this morning at the coffee bar, same road record as the Blue Jays, you wouldn't believe it, would you? But they do.
I'd not believe, especially with Cabrera and Fielder and Verlander and Fister. It makes no sense.
No significant injuries, but they're 16-19 on the road. The key now is turn Rogers Center into a den of victories. And it's been now, this is the one thing that's lacking, a real home run. You know, like, I mean, a run of games at home in which you win 5 out of 7. And that's a great goal to set over the next, there's 6 games coming up at home, and then they hit the road, obviously, and will be at Fenway later in the month.
But it's incumbent upon Johnson tonight to carry over the momentum of the last 4 starts from the 4 starting pitchers. It was that significant when you allow just a couple earned runs in 4 games in Texas. Now Johnson's got to meet that kind of challenge.
It'd be nice to see the crowds at Rogers Center tonight. It's going to be different. Obviously, we're starting a weeknight series as opposed to the weekend series when Texas was just here.
Yeah, they were great
before,
crowds.
Right? Terrific crowds that entire weekend before that road trip began and finished then in Texas.
But so much getting shaved down. I mean, they're not the 29th best ERA in the league now. They're 22nd. The bats have been relatively consistent. We've talked about Adam Lind's prowess last segment, but they're getting it from all around. It still doesn't look right when you see a Mark DeRosa batting fifth in an order, but they trust him to put the ball in play and to make contact with it and to drop and to keep Rasmus and Aaron Sebia, who have not been very good in terms of contact hitting, down lower in the order. But look at Colby Rasmus, though, a guy that had a lot of trouble putting the ball in play early in the season. Had a real bad start, little bit of a crest, and then a real bad finish to last season. He might be hitting the ball the most consistently we've seen him. I've never been a huge, I wouldn't say supporter. I've never been a guy that thinks the guy's going to turn into one of the elite center fielders. But you can win with him. I don't buy into the people that go, well, you can't succeed with a guy like Colby Rasmus out there. If all the other pieces are doing what they're supposed to be doing, you can get by with what Rasmus does, hitting 25 home runs. Hitting 250, getting on base, 320, 330 on base percentage would be understandable and acceptable.
Especially with his defense. You get that kind of production without a center field defense, then you have something to work with.
So the Spurs 114, Heat 104 last night. By the way, we'll talk more Blue Jays with Buck Martinez. He'll call tonight's game De La Rosa against Johnson tonight on Sportsnet. And, of course, the game's on Sportsnet 590, the fan as well. Buck Martinez coming up at 8:20. But it's all San Antonio, and they win a game that I know the Heat are going to get criticized for how they entered the game. There's not as much talk about LeBron and where he was. Thought he made his shots. I thought he led the run. But again, the perimeter defense outside stopping San Antonio from getting big baskets, and especially those from Danny Green, who stepped into this lineup as a guy that got cut from the team that drafted him, the Cleveland Cavaliers, a couple years ago. He stepped in and been a huge factor. He has to win the MVP if San Antonio wins tomorrow night.
He's right? made NBA history with the most 3 points completed in an NBA final series ever. With two games at least, well, at least one game left, possibly two games left. He's gone from a guy who averages 10 points a game in the regular season to over 18 points a game in this finals. I can't see how you would vote for anybody else.
I mean, I'm trying to find a non-Hall of Famer to have won NBA Finals MVP since, like, 1978. Maybe Chauncey Billups, but there's still that possibility. Billups will go in, squeak in. Not in the first year, but it's all, I mean, you know, you name it, D. Wade, Shaq, Kobe, Michael Jordan, Tim Duncan, Isaiah Thomas, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. Not Danny Green, right?
I know. It's so far to left field, and he's got 25 three-pointers in the five games to date.
God.
And anything now is just gravy padding his record. There's no way in heck that Spoelstra writes on the whiteboard in the room before they step onto the court, watch out for Danny Green. It's Duncan, it's Ginobili, it's Barber.
He's hit six twice now in games this series. And last night, when you see his shooting last night, I mean, in some cases, he's not just beyond the arc. He's beyond the arc. I mean, he steps beyond the arc before he lets these shots go.
Well, if you're going to put emphasis to defend him, Popovich will take it, because that means one of the big three are going to be one-on-one or have a lot more open looks to get shots of their own.
Yeah, the thing is, I think Miami, I would still think Miami is going to win the series. I know their home floor is not exactly the Thunderdome, but they are more comfortable there. Well, here's what I can't get. I was arguing with Tim McAuliffe the other night about the 2-3-2, and the idea is it's such a disadvantage for the home team, for the team to not get, at one point they play less home games, and you can make that argument now. San Antonio's had three home games, and Miami's had two. Is that fair? No, but wouldn't San Antonio love to have game six at home instead of game five? Too bad. You've already used your games. I don't see it. And we were talking about that with hockey and how it doesn't work. It doesn't happen in hockey. They tried it for a couple of years. Nobody seemed to like it. But it's all we've ever known for baseball growing up with the World Series and then eventually the subsequent championship. Like, who feels bad for Miami? You split at home. You lost two of three on the road.
you know, you have to win your last two. Oh, the humanity. Like, what are we supposed to do for Miami?
Well, and most assumed this would be a seven-game series to begin with. And the
nobody was winning this in five. Miami shocked everybody beating Oklahoma City in five last year. So they weren't going to do it 2 years in a row.
And this series has been phenomenally bizarre. The pattern it's set, every time San Antonio has won, including the opener, Miami follows with a win of their own. So you can assume in game six, if you follow the pattern, Miami's going to win to force the game seven, and you get to do it at home.
Like, is Miami had anybody to blame but themselves if they lose?
Goodness, no.
Bad perimeter defense, not every superstar going on a given night.
And when they lose big in the series.
No doubt that they have to look in the mirror to find the fault in the series or the fact that they're trailing. But with the 2-3-2 format, it does make it more likely for the underdog team, the team with the fewer home games, to lead at any point in the series. San Antonio gets the split in Miami. They win the first game, so they're out to the series lead right away. But then they come back home and they take 2 of 3. They continue to lead the series. If you're going 2-2-1-1-1 and you split in Miami, Miami comes back and splits in San Antonio, you're even going back home instead of down. There's a big momentum difference.
But the NBA, it's always favoring the home team. You shouldn't have that split on home court to begin the series. So all of a sudden, you've put the ball in the Spurs court. You can't be bitching and complaining about it if you can't win in your own court to begin the series.
3 years ago, Celtics beat the Lakers 92-86 in Game 5. The Lakers won by 22 games in Game 6 and beat them 83-79 in Game 7. I don't know if that's going to happen. It's hard to see a 22-point Miami win tomorrow night or in Game 7. But doesn't everybody feel like San Antonio has to take the momentum, take it right into tomorrow night and win?
Absolutely.
Because no one's run two in a row in the series.
I mean, this should shoot down most NBA conspiracy theorists about the Heat. They didn't get a lot of calls. There were a couple calls last night. They called Mike Miller on a hip check on basically setting a pick out of bounds. The basket counts there with an 8 with 4 minutes to go, and Spurs' necks were getting a little. That would have redefined choke to blow a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter last night.
Birdman would have got that call.
He might have. You like the Birdman. I can sense this. Buck Martinez is going to join us next. Eric Smith at 8:40, and Bull Durham turns 25 this weekend. But what's the worst thing about the plot and the way it works?
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Swing and a miss. He struck him out way out in front. Lunging for that pitch was Leonis.
Hey, Wang, what's with the pictures? It's a parking lot. Come on, we in?
Chen-Min Wong's been excellent for the Blue Jays. 4 straight wins in Arlington. Rarely done, and it's the Rangers that are reeling now, falling further behind the Oakland A's for first place in the AL West. Jorge De La Rosa, Josh Johnson tonight, first of 3 against the Rockies as the Blue Jays get done with interleague play for a while, and then they'll slide back into the AL East against Baltimore this weekend. The Orioles start 3 against Detroit. The Red Sox start 3 against the Rays tomorrow, so it's nice when you got the two division teams beating each other up potentially, and the Yankees host the Dodgers. Interleague play. Yasiel Puig takes Manhattan. He was 3 for 4 again yesterday. Tomorrow night for the start of 2 games. Dodgers-Yankees. That's exciting.
And Blue Jays fans can only hope that Zach Greinke plunks somebody up near the noggin and start another brawl.
Gosh.
What?
You don't want to win that way. Buck Martinez is the Blue Jays play-by-play man on Sportsnet. For Featherlight Ladders, he joins us this morning. Built on Trust Canadian since 1949. Buck, welcome back. Game on, isn't it? The Blue Jays needed that kind of weekend to put themselves in conversations once again about the postseason going into July and August, and they got it.
Yeah, they sure did. They had a good road trip, and it's the first time they've swept 4 games in Texas. But now it looks respectable, 32-36. You can say, okay, now we can see 500. And that's the first plateau they have to get to.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get to 500. And, you know, Colorado's banged up a little bit. No Troy Tulowitzki for this next 3-game series. So at least they have that in their favor. And Josh Johnson, you know, you hope he continues this streak of good pitching.
But, Buck, a lot of people have been waiting all year to see 4 straight starts like we witnessed this weekend in Texas. Why were they able to put it together and be so effective against the Rangers?
Well, I think, well, you got 2 guys that weren't starting before, and Rodgers and Wong. Chen-Min Wong's been good this minute. Rodgers has been exceptional. Right now, Rodgers is throwing the ball as well as anybody in the rotation. And he's going to be a tough guy to take out. physically, his stuff is as good as anybody. He's got great movement on his sinker. His curveball's good. His changeup's good. And he has swagger. He likes starting. He walks out there thinking that he's going to beat you, and you need to have that. Mark Burley has been great. He has really been on a roll since that blow-up in Tampa Bay when he gave up 7 runs in one inning. And he's thrown the ball like we have seen throughout his career. But on this road trip, they won 5 games. 4 wins came from starters, and that's a different trend, and that's a good one. And, you know, the bullpen only pitched 15 innings on this road trip, which is really good, meaning the starters are starting to throw better.
Buck Martinez, our guest for Featherlight Ladders. And it's odd with Wong, isn't it? You saw him last year. He actually came here to Toronto midweek game, if I recall, and pitched decently. Wasn't going deep into games for the Nationals, and he was injured in August. But it was kind of shocking for a team that they shut Strasburg down in September, get some innings out of him in September, and then they didn't really utilize him in the postseason, then kind of said goodbye to him. I thought he was okay with them.
No, he really didn't throw well last year. I saw him pitch in Japan during the World Baseball Classic. He pitched for Chinese Taipei and pitched for Japan and threw the ball a little bit better. But right now he's throwing better than he did even in March.
Yeah.
So I think he's getting more arm strength. You know, he's had shoulder surgery. He had the foot problem with the Yankees several years ago. So he's getting closer. He's using his fork ball he hasn't used for a couple of years. And what he's really doing, and Pat Henkin told me this last night coming home, he said, Chien-Ming Wong has exceptional fastball command. And that's what's allowed him to have 2 decent starts. First one in Chicago wasn't very good. He went 7 1/3, but he was better yesterday.
We talked about it earlier, Buck. Can you think of another hitter like Adam Lind who was almost out of the organization to hitting the way he is right now?
You know what? There's 2 guys that were close to that. Edwin Encarnacion was another.
That's true, yeah.
He went back down to the minor leagues, and to their credit, they both had the perfect attitude. I'm going to work this out. I'm going to come back and do what I can do. Adam Lind is only 4 plate appearances shy of qualifying for the American League batting league. And if he qualified, he'd be 2 points behind Miguel Cabrera. He's hitting 350. Cabrera's hitting 352. So he's going to make up ground, and he'll be on the leaderboards here shortly, and that'll be good to see. But he is swinging a red-hot bat right now. And he's hitting with a lot of confidence. So hopefully he'll continue that, and I don't see why he wouldn't.
And we're seeing him do it against lefties. It's a really small sample size, but he's hitting over 500 against lefties this year, and that's been the real bugaboo. That's why we all thought coming into this year it's almost strictly a platoon situation. You're going to see more righties than lefties, but John Gibbons would be really hesitant to use him against lefties. That's not been the case because when he's been in there, he's actually been consistent with it.
Yeah, and he's hit lefties that he hasn't hit before. He even got a hit off Matt Thornton in Chicago, and he had never had a hit against him. Got a couple more hits off of Derek Holland down in Texas, and he's swinging the bat against good left-handers. And, you know, when you're hitting 520 against left-handers, it's hard to keep you out of lineup.
Yeah. When you're playing as well as the Blue Jays are right now, does it give Anthopoulos and Gibbons maybe a little more patience in the rehab for Jose Reyes for when they want him back, not trying to push him too fast, Buck?
I expect, and this is my own opinion without any inside information, I expect we'll see him by Friday. I just think he's coming along so quickly. You know, he's had great games. He's done a lot of good things. And baseball is so easy for him once he's physically set. I don't think there's any reason to keep him down in the minor leagues. Bring him right back up here and let him play.
Buck, we appreciate this. Have a great call tonight against the Rockies. Thanks so much.
All right, you guys have a great day.
There's Buck Martinez joining us on Sportsnet tonight. 7:07 start at the Rogers Center. 5.5 games the Blue Jays are out of that wild card race. And again, as we talked about, to me, and I think you guys agree, the only contenders for this these two spots, if you can't even gift the Red Sox the division, but they're first place right now, so let's say it's theirs. You got Red Sox, Tigers, A's winning divisions right now, and your wild card contenders, to me, are the 4 teams in the AL East and Texas. That's it. I don't think we're going to see I know Kansas City's been hot lately. I don't think we're going to see a Cleveland, Kansas City step up from, you know, around 500, be consistent enough because they have the depth to do it to all of a sudden be in this conversation where they've got 91, 90, 92 wins going into the last week of the season. I don't think they're going to be there. And I'm not guaranteeing the Blue Jays are, but the Angels are about a week away from people completely and utterly writing them off. And I think that's fair.
And that's what makes the series coming up for the Blue Jays in Tampa beginning on the 24th of this month so important, Because if that's the case and Tampa's that one team you really got to be able neck and neck with to be a true contender for the wild card, they can have to take two or three down in Tampa, a place that's been a house of horrors for the Blue Jays the last number of years.
Totally. Now, everyone remembers there was a famous pageant. There was a Miss Teen USA pageant. But 7-8 years ago, and I think it was Miss Teen South Carolina that gave an answer. Mario Lopez is on stage. He's one of my favorites. I loved him and everything. So there was a question about geography and maps, and she gave this famous answer about how, well, many Americans probably can't afford maps, so they can't find places like, and she referred to it three times as the Iraq, like it's like, you know, the Dutch Antilles or something like that.
Or the United Arab Emirates.
Exactly.
Right.
We could play that. Why don't we do that? Let's do that one first, because there's a new contender for worst pageant answer ever. So this is Miss Teen South Carolina from several years. She's probably gone on. She's probably running a corporation right now. Maybe even a TV network. Here she is.
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps. And I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
Strong finish. You know, honestly, for everywhere such as, by that, after that, you really got on track, I thought.
Iraq.
I give it an 8.5.
Iraq and the Asian nations. That's what I picked up.
Why not? Yeah. That's a White Stripes album, actually. Iraq and the Asian nations. That's when Seven Nation Army's on. But last night, Miss Utah stepped up at the Miss USA pageant, Miss Utah for USA. And here was the question. A recent report shows that in 40% of American families with kids, women are the primary earners. God, yeah. Tell me about it. Yet they continue to earn less than men. What does this... Tell Jim about it. That's what I meant to say. Yet they continue to earn less than men. What does this say about society? Here's Miss Utah, Marissa Powell.
A recent report shows that 40% of American families with children, women are the primary earners, yet they continue to earn less than men. What does this say about society?
I think we can relate this back to education and how we are continuing to try to strive to figure out how to create jobs right now. That is the biggest problem. And I think especially the men are seen as the leaders of this. And so we need to try to figure out how to create education better so that we can solve this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Utah. Thank you, sweetheart.
All right. You guys are the judges. I'm asking, I'm not asking you to look at either girl. Which is the worst answer? The worser answer. They would say.
I think Utah gets my vote for the worst answer.
We may have a new winner.
You guys thought that was worse than the Miss Teen.
She got so lost.
She should be older. Well, she stopped at least and tried to compose herself. It wasn't just this endless rambling. Plus, there was silence for Miss Teen South Carolina. Miss Utah's got all these jamming beats going on behind her. Is Dr. Dre spinning tunes behind her on a turntable? Doesn't seem fair. If I'm jamming at a club, and you guys know what my weekends are like, I'm jamming at a club and someone says, Brady, want to ask you about the Kyoto Protocol. You got a minute? I don't have a good answer because I could give a great answer if it wasn't for the music, I'm sure. But, the music throws me off. I think that threw Miss Utah off.
See, at least Miss South Carolina came up with U.S. Americans, the Iraq. I mean, she had some originality to her answer. Miss Utah sort of meandered a bit and came up with nothing.
You thought she was just filibustering?
Exactly.
Yeah. She sounded smarter. Is that wrong to say that?
No.
That's fair.
That's very fair.
All right, I hear the music. Yes, the Money Game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, brought to you by your GTA Acura retailers. Pulse Quickening Performance now comes with an equally exciting offer during Acura's Season to Drive sales event. Lease the 2013 TL with nothing down at just $198 biweekly. See your retailer for details. You might not have known, Mike Eppel, from 680 News, that 40% of American families with kids have women as the primary earner, but now you do.
And it is like such as the Iraq, the Iran, and the Syria.
Such as.
Actually, and such as.
That's what she said!
driving the Marcus this morning. Guys, you know, it didn't help that Donald Trump was probably off to the sidelines there scowling at her while she was trying to give that answer.
Donald put some pressure on her.
It was a fine two-hour ad campaign for all things Trump that award show, like such as
now,
the Iraq.
He might have thought Miss Utah was born in Kenya like the president.
It's possible. There may be a conspiracy theory involved as well. Right. Price for oil this morning, guys, at a four-month high, just above $98 a barrel. Price at the pumps, we've seen it climb to $1.29 in some locales, getting more expensive as we head into the summer. The Dow futures looking good this morning, up 120 points. That is signaling a strong start to the trading week on Wall Street. We'd like to see the TSX follow that lead. We're coming off 9 out of 11 money-losing sessions for our TSX composite, which is down about 4% now year to date. Weekend box office. Did you see The Man of Steel?
I didn't. I was at a drive-in that was showing it. It's a long story, but anyway.
120. A drive-in, really?
Yeah.
Not many of those left.
Yeah, I was up in Kingston. I was in an older part of Kingston.
Okay, there's one outside of Lindsay as well, Kawartha Lakes or whatever it's called. The Man of Steel bringing in $125 million in box office receipts. That'll be important, perhaps, for Time Warner shares today, and the Canadian dollar opening the week at 98.5 cents U.S., and that's a one-month high.
Mike, better answer than either Miss Teen South Carolina or Miss Utah.
It is like you did such great. As the Iraq.
Thank you, Mike. We'll get more from Mike Apple tomorrow, 6:30, 8:30. Coming up, Eric Smith on Game 6. What he expects from the Miami Heat back home tomorrow night. And Bull Durham turns 25. Some other movies that were released the same weekend as Bull Durham you'll be shocked by, and how poorly it did at the box office for what's turned into an absolute classic 25 years later. It's Brady and Lang.
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Left corner. Here's Green. Here's three. No good. Rebound Duncan. Good. Timeout Miami. Oh, my goodness. Another Spurs run, 19-1.
That's the excellent Mike Tirico on the call from ESPN Radio. Spurs 3, Heat 2 in the series. They win 114-104 last night. Back to South Beach it goes for a game 6. Eric Smith, Raptors play-by-play man, along with Paul Jones, of course. You know him, you love him from the broadcast, joins us this morning to discuss. I'm of two minds, Eric. You tell me which is the more accurate. One, it drives me crazy, the lack of urgency the Heat seem to have sometimes. They just don't have that killer instinct. That's part of me. The other part is it's hard to win the NBA Finals. The Bulls got taken to 6 games, 5 out of the 6 times they won. It's, San Antonio's a damn good team. They'd expect to lose 2 of 3 to San Antonio if they play them in the regular season. I still feel like Miami's going to pull this out somehow.
I think I'm probably in the same boat as you, Greg, in that it's hard to win and it's hard to criticize, I think, as a result, because, these are the two best teams. So there's a reason why San Antonio's maybe up 3-2, or a reason why Miami's been able to handily win 2 of the 5 games to this point and give it right back to San Antonio. But that said, I'm watching the game last night, and I've never been a guy that says, I don't think you're giving the effort, because how do I know how hard you are or aren't playing? But just the competitive level, the compete level overall that you saw in stretches last night from San Antonio versus Miami, it certainly looked like San Antonio was going that much harder, and that Miami, while playing hard maybe, was kind of having it in third gear and hadn't kicked it into fourth yet. It seemed like there was kind of that malaise over the team at times, thinking, we can turn it on when we need to. And when they turned it on in the third quarter, it looked like they got themselves back into it, but they put the foot off the gas. Suddenly San Antonio comes back. I think Popovich made a great adjustment attacking Miami when they didn't have a point guard on the floor in the fourth quarter and allowed Tony Parker to kind of get into the lane many times. I think that ultimately turned things around when San Antonio went on the big run and ripped the game open again.
And Eric, did Popovich throw the Heat and Eric Spoelstra for a loop by starting Ginobili last night?
I think so. I think so. And it was, as crazy as it sounds, Jim, I think it was a bit of a calculated risk as well, based on the fact that Ginobili hasn't been good in this final. And wasn't fantastic over the course of the season, battling through injuries before finally coming back. But to his credit, he took the opportunity and he went with it big time. And I think Miami did not have that answer for him, clearly, the way that he was playing, the way that he was scoring last night. And as has been the case now, so many times in this series, arguably every game, it's somebody from whoever wins, it's somebody from their supporting cast who has ultimately been that third guy, that fourth guy that's made a difference, as opposed to the big guys, whether it be LeBron or Wade or Duncan or Parker getting it done. It's somebody from that supporting cast. And crazy as it is, Ginobili is that supporting cast right now based on how he's played. And it was him and it was Danny Green last night that really ripped that game and gave it to San Antonio the 3-2 lead.
So is it just Green making shots or is it still perimeter defending? I mean, they were 16 of 32 last Tuesday. They were 9 of 22 last night. And the Heat made more three-point buckets than San Antonio out of urgency because they were down most of the game. But do you still think, is it a major flaw in Miami's game defending the three?
I think it's a big flaw at this point, and they're allowing too many open looks. But at the same time, and I don't mean to split hairs, I think Danny Green is also making some shots right now because there were a couple times last night. I'm trying to think of the one that was, if it was late third or early fourth, where, I mean, Miami, instead of coming on top of the screen, they went below the screen, and then there was still a defender up in his face. He dropped a three from about 4 feet behind the line straight away from the top of the arc. I mean, those are shots that you just don't make, and he's knocking them down cleanly. So, that said, San Antonio was one of the top teams, top three, I believe, this season in the NBA in three-point shooting overall. And with all the weapons they have, I mean, you know, one of the top guys in the league in a role player, Matt Bonner, who barely saw the floor last night because of how they were rolling with Danny Green and Manu Ginobili and everybody else. So they've got so many guys from the perimeter that can do it. I think a lot of it comes down to they're damn good, and you've got to be that much better defensively if you're Miami.
So what's your observation of Green? Is this a player getting red hot, or is this a player that looks like the quintessential late bloomer, that when Ginobili moves on, he's the two guard in San Antonio the next several years? Like a Chauncey Billups plays the point, but that was an exceptionally late bloomer in his career, Chauncey Billups, until he got to Detroit.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that's definitely regretting signing a contract extension last year.
Free agent
richer.
This year wouldn't hurt, yeah.
Yeah, you're getting a lot richer right now. I think, you know what it is? I think it's a case of a guy getting an opportunity, as you say, a late bloomer, but a late bloomer in San Antonio.
Yeah.
I think just the system and the style and the confidence and being around those players, that coach, that organization, you know, I'm not looking at him becoming a Manu Ginobili, becoming a six-man candidate every year or a future all-star, but a guy that can be a heck of a player now that he's got the confidence and the ability to do this and know that he's got a definitive role in the system. I think you're going to be seeing a heck of a lot more of Danny Green going forward, and good on him for you know, taking this opportunity and running with it. And it's not just the finals. Like, clearly he's having an unbelievable run right now, but the way he's played for this team over the last couple of seasons as a key guy with the San Antonio team, it's not like he's just popped up out of nowhere. I think the scoring, to the extent that it is, and his potency from distance has been incredible. But he has been a major part of what San Antonio's done now for a couple of seasons.
Eric, after averaging just over 12 minutes a game the first three games of the series, why is Chris Anderson not seeing the floor the last two games?
I think Miami's, I don't want to necessarily call it scrambling, Jim, but I think they're searching for answers to get more, I think, more scoring overall on the floor. And I think the major issue with that, from my opinion, would be, you know, you're going even smaller when you don't have Anderson out there. You're going with Haslam, you're going with Bosch. I've said from day one of this series that I don't understand why Joel Anthony, and this has nothing to do with the fact that he's Canadian. I don't care about that. I'm not waving the flag here. But you've got a big body, a shot blocker, a guy who doesn't need the ball, any touches offensively, a proven rebounder, a proven shot blocker. And listen, he may be a fraction of what Tim Duncan is, but he's your longest guy that you could maybe put on Tim Duncan and then possibly free up Chris Bosh to do some other things and force somebody else on San Antonio to guard Bosh. You know, Joel Anthony was a big-time player for this Miami team when they went to the finals a couple years ago, granted, yes, and lost. He was still playing significant minutes for them last year when they won their title. Now, all of a sudden, he's, you know, persona non grata in Miami and got a big-time, you know, contract just sitting on the bench. I do not understand why they're not using him and switching things up. Maybe game 6 and 7, maybe Spoelstra does what Popovich did and, you know, pulls a surprise by putting somebody different in the lineup like Pop did with Ginobili. But I can't understand why you've got a guy like Joel Anthony there and he's not playing.
I totally agree. You're right. He's really limited, but eat some minutes. Spoelstra didn't use him at all this year against Indiana.
And he doesn't want the ball.
But he used him.
He's gonna go there and do his job. That's it.
He used it when Bosch was injured. He used him tons last year against Indiana. And when Bosch was getting his game back, he was a big reason they got past Indiana, to be perfectly honest, because he could eat the minutes against Hibbard.
Yeah, you put a big body up against him, and then it's gonna give Chris Bosch an opportunity to not have to guard the best big on the other team, and he's clearly undersized against almost all of them. And then offensively, it forces the other team to match up as well. Okay, you're probably not going to put Tim Duncan on Joel Anthony because you're not going to worry about, you know, Joel Anthony's offense. But all right, that means Bosch has that much more energy, and you still got to respect the fact that there's a 7-footer standing under in Anthony. So maybe you can't double up on Bosch, or maybe you can't, you know, sort of pinch guys over onto the post onto Bosch. I don't know. Clearly, Spoelstra has more answers than me, but I've been shocked by that this entire postseason, let alone in this final.
Eric, thanks for this. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Eric Smith, some great insight on Heat Spurs. They'll go game six tomorrow night. Jeff Blair's coming in just a little bit. Now, yesterday, 25th anniversary of a movie we've all probably seen 20 times. Comes on AMC or it comes on... TNT, we're watching Bull Durham, right?
At least 20 times. Maybe 25.
Outside of the Rockies, I've probably seen it as much, if not more, than any of the other sports movies that exist out there.
Because it holds up so well.
I should say chick flicks. Of all the chick flicks, it's one of the... Because that's one of the biggest problems people have with it is the overdone romance. But, you know, you're making a movie... You need Susan Sarandon. You need the character. You need the love triangle.
Rocky's
women
a love story,
won't go
too.
See this, right?
Rocky's a love story, too.
I'm trying to think of baseball movies that women don't want to go see. Like, For the Love of the Game has to have half an hour of all the agonizing about Kevin Costner's relationship with Kelly Pratt. You can't just show footage of a perfect game for an aging pitcher for the Detroit Tigers.
The Natural had a love story in it, too.
Yeah, if you consider Glenn Close movies involving love stories.
Oh.
So some great trivia from Bull Durham. Let's see if Jeff Blair knows some of these things ahead of time.
Never seen Bull Durham.
Come on.
We have not. Okay.
Stop it.
I haven't.
What?
I'm
making that up.
But when the Bat Boy.
I try to be honest.
Trying to be honest. He says honest
for
show.
For the first time.
Honest is the first policy. When the Bat Boy tells Crash Davis get a hit, Crash, Kevin Costner ad-libs the shut up line. The kid playing the Bat Boy doesn't know this is coming, so he starts crying. They don't film. They don't show that. But he started bawling.
No kidding.
That kid later turned into Justin Rose, who just cries.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
His dad died. Come on.
The rain out was...
Did Kevin Costner's dad died?
No.
Justin Rose.
Is very complicated. Everybody's dad eventually dies.
It's very tough to keep up this morning.
Okay.
Kurt Russell was supposed to play Crash Davis. Had to drop out. Was working on another film. Nick Nolte, at one point, was going to play the manager. Dropped out of the film. Now, that would have been really intriguing. I don't even know the manager's name, but Nick Nolte would have made a real gruff minor league manager, wouldn't he have?
I can't imagine him doing the lollygagging line, though. Throwing the bats into the shower.
He could have pulled that off.
Brad
Pitt's throwing bats around in Moneyball, and he's the GM.
That's true.
How do you think Alex Anthopoulos comes down to the Jays clubhouse and throws bats around? Not with John Farrell last year. I don't think he was allowed in
April,
last
year he's done it a lot.
Is that right? What else? The bus. There's a headline that reads "Hard Hitting Witten," and it's a story actually about Mark Witten in the South Atlantic League from a paper in 1987 in Durham. Mark Witten was one of the best players in Double A baseball, and you see one of the players reading a headline that says, "I've never noticed that before."
Wow,
hard hitting Mark Witten. How about that?
I did not know. I've never seen.
I remember
that
nickname, Hard Hitting Witten.
Yeah. Now, we talked about the Roman. Is there too much of... I mean, we're trying to pick flaws out of a fantastic movie.
The Susan Sarandon thing was okay. I didn't need Jimmy and Millie getting married and all that stuff.
Like, that was an important transition from shagging the starting pitcher, standing up at the start of the game. I mean, not many starters are having sex with a groupie 10 minutes before their start.
Their debut, yes.
It explains some Blue Jays recent seasons, but not all of them.
Okay. How do you know that?
It also provides a little bit of the comic relief at the meeting on the mound.
Yes, that's true. That's very important.
Is that right? That does a little bit. And then she finds someone that's got her interest. She finds a guy that's a big God Squad guy, gets married, so everybody's happy.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't have a problem with that.
It's tough to find any flaws with the movie. It's so good, though.
Isn't the 25th anniversary of this movie soon?
This weekend. Yes.
Oh, yesterday. This weekend.
That's why we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You got 25 more years to see it.
Maybe he doesn't. all right.
And I may not. You never know.
And the relationship. Susan Sarandon was 42 when she filmed it. Kevin Costner, 33. Looks older than 33 in the movie. And Tim Robbins, 30.
Was this before he was doing Cal Ripken Jr.'s wife, Costner? Or after?
That's that rumor
what?
About the lights getting
turned
off.
Is that a rumor?
Off.
Oh, I'm
that
sorry.
That is that's a old wives' tale.
It's, well, I don't know. Is it really?
It's an urban legend. Is actually nicer thing to say.
I thought
than old wives' tale.
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was pretty much factual.
Also, Harrison Ford was considered for Crash Davis instead of Kevin Costner.
Would not have worked.
Why not?
No, Kevin Costner was the perfect.
Kevin Costner was
kind
perfect.
Of an unknown though at the time.
But Harrison Ford, no, he's too. He's
Kevin
too
Costner was good. He could pull off the sour minor league guy.
Kim Basinger auditioned for the role of Annie.
She would have been great.
She would have been awesome.
She would have been great. Susan Sarandon character. So there you go. Don Johnson turned down the role of Crash. See, I'm Miami. Come on. That would have
been. No, Don Johnson, that wouldn't have been
with
bad.
Don Johnson.
He was good in
Don
Tin
Johnson
Cup.
Wanted to sing. He would only take the role if they let him sing.
I'll put Heartbeat on any soundtrack.
Oh, my God.
I'll do that. Jeff Blair
the worst
is next.
Song of all time.
Baseball Central coming up.
Oh, yeah.
At 11.
Oh.
And listen, knock it off.
5-game winning streak. And they're, what, 8.5 back.
Can you give.
Woo-hoo.
On that show, they'll run down the starting rotation for the ALDS for the Blue Jays. They're projected ALDS starting rotation.
Yeah.
We'll see
you
tomorrow.
Baby.
There's Heartbeat for you. Bye-bye. See you later.
I don't care what you say. You can give it away. Your money don't mean much to me.